White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker on Moonsday morning, December the 8th, 2014. Moonsday. Still got a full moon out there. We're pretty close to it. Boy, it came up in the east. Yeah. So beautiful. It was harvest moon. It's so beautiful, I'll tell you that. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. On a sort of, I think the sun's trying to come out a little bit. It's cool, but not a bad day for December. Well, if you haven't seen it and you get a chance, you might enjoy Boardwalk with Busini in it. It's a really neat expose of what was going on back in the 20s, late 20s, with bootlegging, cartels, and all that kind of stuff, and how the heroin trade, the Jews tried to bring the heroin trade in, so forth. So if you get a chance, in your leisure time, you watch old Boardwalk. And then another one that just came up with Malkovich was Double Cross. The story of Blackbeard the Pirate. It's a series. And the video store, you can get these a whole bunch of shows on one disc, which make it nice with no ads or anything like that. But Malkovich plays a great Blackbeard. And there's a lot of things in this film, too, that you pick up about how the pirates voted for who was going to run the show. They were fighting the King of England and so forth, but that's supposed to be the great Democrat, but the pirates ran more of a democratic operation than the kings of Europe ever did, so you'll find it to be quite interesting. And some of the innovations they used that later were modernized and picked up by the U.S. Navy and so forth, they were improvising way back then. So anyhow, that's it. Double Cross, if you get a chance. Well, I got off a few money orders yesterday for the several POWs that we try to help out. So that's done. I'm not the kind of guy that likes to do paperwork. So it's like pulling teeth for me to sit down and do paperwork. But anyhow, they're in the mail today. I'm hoping that they'll get their money by Christmas time. Be a nice surprise for them. And I just filled out the papers for visiting privileges to Dennis Mahon. John Metzger is visiting David Tate this week, and which he's done before. In fact, John has visited several of the POWs over the years. And I got a nice Christmas card from Mrs. Scutari. Richard Scutari's wife, and that's nice. And hopefully he'll be looking at getting out on parole this year. You know, sometimes, boys and girls, I gotta bitch a little bit, and I don't think I do a lot of self-promotion, but maybe I should, because all of these right-wing confabs they get together, like recently Stormfront and all this, and I get feedback that I was talked about quite a bit. And one of the problems of me wanting to pursue the lone wolf process, I'm not going to these group meetings, and I'm not speaking. Now, there's a whole new generation of young people involved who've never heard me speak on a platform or anything else, and all they got to go on is what they hear from other people. And there's a lot of people in the right wing. It dribbles down from their leadership. That Metzger, you got to watch him, and all the stuff that goes along with that. So it's a little unbalanced. And so I notice all the time that, or a lot of the time, that other right wing racial groups will use something we've done in the White Aryan Resistance and like that. And one of the things was our cartoon series by A. Wyatt Man, who I told you a long time ago was, those cartoons were put together by a professional cartoonist who we kept his his name private because he was working in Hollywood or up in L.A. And so, because I knew if I gave it to anybody, his name, they put it all over the place and he'd get fired. Of course, he's now retired for quite some time and living in a southern state. But, and people now and then would write us and say, could we use these cartoons? And I say, yeah, I just give White Aryan Resistance credit because, and the reason we want the credit is not because we put the work into creating the cartoon, but when those cartoons first came out and we were putting them out, we were condemned a lot by these right-wing racial conservative leaders, or maybe a little bit Christianized and like that. Yeah, they don't talk about that. In fact, I don't think there was any other group around the country that had a website that was had asked to even put them up for a long time. So that was during the 80s and the 90s. So we were taking a hell of a lot of flack for running those cartoons, both from, of course, our traditional enemies on the left, that I mean, our Negro and homosexual and all those kind of people, but also the right-wing conservatives. And so now I see that Mr. Andrew Anglin, who I have no idea who he is, or, you know, he has this Daily Stormer, which puts out a lot of good stuff, but it's basically the same old World War II worship and Hitler worship that we can't seem to get away from. Like, I don't know how to put it, but a lot of people don't know that the German propaganda machine cranked out a lot of anti-white racist material about the Klan and so forth. They put out cartoons about how horrible the Klan was and how they treated the blacks badly and everything. And that was right in the middle of the Hitler regime. So, and there were a lot of Negroes living in Germany at the time. They didn't get hauled off to a camp. So there was, you know, there's a lot of things about that period that are not quite as clear as people might think. And but anyhow, I prefer to promote our own homegrown racial leaders like Rockwell and like that. He tends to take second place now because there's a lot of right-wing leaders over the years that hated his guts, to be perfectly honest about it. I've got all the audio tapes of Rockwell going around and having private meetings and talking about how all these right-wing conservatives and Edward Fields and the Thunderbolt, he had to sue Fields, and he won, too, for defamation of character, and so forth and so on. So a lot of the younger people don't know the shit that we've gone through, a few of us standing up against the rest on supposedly on our side. Butler went through it. Miles from Michigan went through it. I went through it. And that's about it. I mean, there may be a couple of more there, but the preponderance of the right-wing conservatives, usually Christian types, were nigger-piling us all the time. And they accused Rockwell of everything in the book. And most of that, those attacks didn't come from the left, they came from the right. And of course, the left hated Rockwell's guts. There was no doubt about that. But some of the most vicious stuff came from the right. And we have the proof, if you want it, on audio tapes of what Rockwell went through back then. So we've had this problem for 30, 40 years in this struggle. We get a few guys who get up there and they're the big hee-ho and they march down the street and they put on a uniform and they do this and all that, and but in reality behind the scenes they're tearing each other apart. It just seems to be the nature of the brute. So anyhow, here's the Daily Stormer, and I don't choose to fight with anybody. I just do my own thing, but I will comment on this that Mr. Anglin, as far as I know, never asked the courtesy of using the cartoons, and if he did, if he could give us credit. But even in some of the little messages going in, they act like, as the Jews would say, like I'm chopped liver, like I didn't have much to do with the whole thing. You'd have never saw those cartoons at all if I hadn't have promoted them. So here again, that's I don't know what this stuff is, jealousy or what it is, that everything I do, there's a cadre of people out there who come up with a reason why it's not good or right, or I'm not playing it fair or whatever, you know. And then you'll notice on a lot of these, look at all these so-called racist, mostly Hollywood National Socialist websites, and they'll promote it. They'll put a list of all the groups, I guess, that they support. And there may be up to 100 of them. And you won't see our name. You won't see White Aryan Resistance in there. I mean, come on, boys. I mean, there's enough history that you can see what I've done and accomplished and the shit I've been through. But that's interesting. Because there is a hidden hand in the right wing behind the scenes, the power brokers. Not as many of them as there used to be, you know, with the demise of Dr. Pierce and a few others. You still have Duke around draining the right wing of a lot of money. And I've told you many times his feet are made of clay, but he still keeps going right on, and he's got plenty of money to tour around Europe and do all the things that he wants to do. And once in a while, he'll write a book or have it ghostwritten or something and put it out, and everybody says, "Yeah, but he wrote that book." Well, there's nothing in these books that Buchanan or Duke or any of these guys that write that if you are cognizant of what the hell's going on that you didn't know a long time ago. I don't have to hear guys write a book and say, "Whoa, we're in a bad mess, the white race." You know, like I heard Glenn Becker on the air said, "We got to fight. Hey, wait a minute. Our culture is going away. Our culture is being destroyed." And I said, "Well, where in the hell were you guys back when I was on the border risking my life and a lot of other guys were risking their lives patrolling the border, and the feds were after us, and cartels were half gangs were after us, the commies were after us, and everything else. Where were you back then?" Well, you were safely saying, "Well, that Mesker's this insane son of a bitch. We got to get rid of people like that because they're racist, they're separatists. They want to round up these Mexican people, these poor Mexican people, and ship them out." "Well, we got to find another way of doing that." And, you know, they didn't even want to build a wall. When I told them in San Diego when I ran for Congress, all you have to do was dedicate about a half-mile strip across the border from the ocean over to the desert and use it as a military storage and military training area with chain link on both sides. And any Mexican who tried to climb the fence would be shot. But that would kill two birds with one stone. Well, anyhow, that I was inhumane and hated humanity and everything else. Why is it you hate humanity when you want separation? If you promote integration, you're a wonderful person. But if you want to promote separation and territorial imperative and self-respect for the races, you're the bad guy. Well, anyhow, I know you lone wolves see through a lot of this crap, and but I did have to get it off my chest that most of the people coming into the struggle now don't know anything about mine struggle or my family struggle and the effects and the problems that we've had over the years. They go to these things and they rumor around, and I hear the damnedest, craziest rumors that you'd ever want to hear come back to me from these meetings these right-wingers have. So, anyhow, I'm on with the news, baby. And worse is definitely getting better. Definitely getting better. Even the conservatives are opening up to these black crybabies, and but the left has totally rolled over and put them on all their TV shows. And look at it, Marion Barry. They're running his funeral on the radio last night. Marion Barry, that son of a bitch and crack-smoking nigger from Washington, D.C., nation's capital, with a nigger mayor. She's, well, all the major cities of the country now, I guess, pretty much, have nigger mayors. I mean, how can you have any self-respect as a person who believes in the best interest of the race? How can we have any self-respect? Other countries see that. I mean, even other so-called minority races, the Japanese see it. I know the Chinese see it. I know the Russians see it. The hypocrisy of what's going on in this country, and the Arabs see it. They're no friend of the Negro, and ask the Negro. They still enslave them over there in some places in the Middle East. So anyhow, it's that's the way it goes. But it's as it gets more violent, it's getting better. Oh boy, somebody will quote that. No, they won't even quote that in a newspaper. They have blackballed my letters to the local newspaper now again. So anyhow, he said, "Well, you." I went in and gave the editor hell. He said, "Well, you had N-word in there." Well, what do you want me to say, nigger? And everybody in the office turns their head around. But I do want to thank whoever is the hidden hand behind this black shit for bringing it up, because they're rolling the dice. They're rolling the dice that they're going to get everything they want and they're going to be able to overcome any opposition that comes up. But I don't think so. They don't want to admit the ingrained subconscious racism in the race. It's there. It may get suppressed and pushed down into your subconscious a little farther, and you may make all the excuses in the world that you're not a racist. But sociologists, the honest ones, will tell you that it's there. It's been there, and it's not going to go away. And they thought it would go away in maybe 40 years. Evolution don't work that way, and social evolution don't work that way either. So in the meantime, don't get in the middle of it. Don't side with the cops. Don't side with the blacks. No matter how correct some of the things they say. Some of the things the blacks are saying are definitely true. The goddamn ruling class brought them over here. It wasn't the working class whites. Just like they brought over the white indentured servants. They brought them over here for a capitalistic enterprise on the plantation. Early capitalism. And had them on the sugar plantations too, in the Caribbean, all over the world actually. So that's the way it goes. And when the blacks say that was wrong, that was wrong. It was definitely racially wrong for us. You know, it's just like sticking a flu virus in somebody's arm with a hypodermic needle. They injected the black race into this country, and it may well, and it's well on its way to destroying the white race, unless our opposition makes mistakes, which I think they're making now. I think they're going to get more pushback from cops, because these cops, a whole lot of them were trained to fight in Afghanistan, and Iraq and so forth, and they're trained to kill. And you can't take that out of a man in 24 hours, or maybe 24 years. So you're going to put them into police jobs around the city and expect them not to get rough with people? And then, of course, the niggers fall right into that trap. They act goofy and do stupid stuff, And they always seem like they always want to struggle against the cop. I mean, you know, I admit that if I'm in a bad situation, I want to live to fight another day. If the cop says to get out of the car, I get out of the car. They put your hands on the roof. I put my hands on the roof. Where's your driver's license and registration? Here's your driver's license and registration. And then he tells me what the score is, and I sign the ticket and go home. Pissed off after I get in the car, cussing the hell out of the cop. But I'm sure not going to physically resist the cop. Unless it's an absolute thing where he's definitely trying to kill me. I mean, you know, so. But these niggers, they don't get it. They always want to start wrestling around with a cop. And, of course, the cop responds. You see it on all these cop shows. It's funny to watch them because, and the same way it's funny to watch them when they get charged with a crime and how they go into the police station and they blab their mouth off and talk themselves right into prison. And these well-trained interrogator cops can push them around and herd them around. They'll get a conviction every time. I mean, you know, so, niggers are dumb, generally. The race is dumb. They're inferior, and they're not getting any better. They're getting worse. I mean, you see blacks in some other countries, you know, down in Jamaica and Trinidad, there's a class of Negroes down there who speak the King's English, and you can talk to very intelligently and fine. But they're in the minority, and the ones that come up to New York despise American Negroes. I've heard them tell. They don't want to have anything to do with American Negroes. Okay, what else we got here? Here's a note from one of our friends, T.T. I enjoy using the term nigger. I rarely, if ever, use or heard nigger as a child. There were only one or two black families in my town, and my parents were not racially conscious, as there was little need to be where we lived. Well, mine wasn't either. I don't remember hearing the word nigger at all, and as I was being raised, we didn't even talk about blacks. There weren't any around, you know. Described in most dictionaries as its use considered to be a vulgar, contemptuous, disrespectful, insensitive, insulting, and really racially offensive noun for black or darker skinned persons. Of course it is, and that's why I want to reinstitute it, revive it, because we don't respect them. Generally, we don't respect them at all. And generally, there's a hell of a lot of blacks existing now that don't respect other blacks. As a racist, I can't think of another term that represents exactly how I would prefer to express my feelings towards the Negroid people. Okay, now, T.T. says, I have tried many ways to make a change, and I have tried them all. They haven't worked for the most part. The water is still gushing through the crack in the racial dam. The crack keeps growing wider. I reverted to the term Negro, nigger. I also wish to invigorate the understanding and the use of white supremacy. I used to condemn the use of white supremacy, but now I see it's a weapon we must use. Anyhow, if we go down fighting, at least let's do it with gusto. That's my comment. Also, by saying, yeah, I'm a white supremacist and I don't like niggers, it keeps all the rabble whites away from you. You know, the stupid ones and the Christian ones and all that kind of stuff. Keeps them away from you. Don't bother you. Because if they know exactly where you're coming from. Otherwise, you know, you have to sit around like I did for years and argue and debate and try to converse and try to change the mind, and it didn't get anywhere. Not anywhere. Well, I converted some people, but in the end, it wasn't worth all the energy and money I put into it. Like I'm telling you, and I've told you for quite a while now, don't waste your time on these numbnut whites out there. They either like you or they don't. And that's it. I mean, you know, trying to discuss and point out anything beyond we's all equal, that's the only thing they understand. And they can't possibly intellectually or subconsciously or consciously believe that. I mean, it's like they've been totally hypnotized. If they can look at an ugly nigger talking nigger language, Ebonics, and all that kind of stuff, and say he's my equal, they have to be insane. Which I guess a majority of whites now are insane. For sure, the leadership's insane.
The Russian ruble is continuing its downward trend following the drop in oil prices and fears of further sanctions over Ukraine. The currency isn't the only thing falling, though. So are attitudes towards the West, as CCTV's Tom Barton reports.
Russian investor Oleg Grinko, he's critical of the West and in favor of shutting down Russian imports from there, a view seldom heard before the crisis.
Russians are capable of withholding from comfort. As soon as the ability manifests itself in people, Russia could take any step. Okay, I won't have a new TV and an Italian jacket. Okay, I'll stand in line again for milk and bread like in the 90s. The main thing is that I always have my milk and bread.
These days, it's not hard to find Russians who say similar things to Oleg.
U.S. and Western Europe countries are not very reasonable in their sanctions, because the sanctions are not against the authorities, but against all the country, including the people.
Ukraine is guilty. It was them who wanted to secede from us. Before that, we lived in friendship and peace, and everything was good.
The USA think of themselves as the country that dominates the world.
Criticism of the West and of Ukraine's government is frequent from Russian media and politicians.
The topics of Ukraine and sanctions are where politics and business have come to meet in Russian public life. For the past decade, the skyscrapers of Moscow City were a symbol of Russia's attempt at a pro-business focus. But many of those offices are empty now. This crisis has changed the entire public discourse here. The language of security and politics now has the upper hand.
Russia's finance minister said recently that the country couldn't afford a $576 billion military spending program. His predecessor resigned in protest after his opposition to proposed military spending was ignored. If the economy continues to slide, say economists, Russians could start to become far less enthused with their government.
If the situation gets worse, then of course people's impression will change. I really hope that the situation doesn't get to that. We need to agree with the whole world, because to be in isolation now in the 21st century, even for such a big country like Russia, would be impossible.
Polls of public support for Russian President Vladimir Putin have now fallen below 50% from a high earlier in the year. Tom Barton, CCTV, Moscow.
Well, I like the idea of people saying I'll use stuff and I won't get new Italian shoes and I won't do this and I won't do that. That's the way to fight it, one way to fight it. And I like the spirit to where they'll say, yeah, well, I can go back and live in the 90s where I'll have to stand in a line for food and like that. Do you hear any Americans talk like that? No, Americans could not do that. They'd be killing each other in the lines at the grocery store. And that's probably coming at some point. But the guy here that says that, we live in this whole big world, you know, they try to do this world community shit, but it always boils down to the neighborhood and the region, the country. And but typical of the capitalist West, in many times their stupidity, every time they sanction Russia, it comes back and bites them in the ass. I just saw a story from Sweden where a lot of their heavy equipment parts came from Russia. Now they can't get them, and they're having to pay 10 times as much to get them from somebody else. So this stuff always backfires, and there should be no reason. Anyhow, the whole Ukrainian thing is bullshit. And, of course, the Jews moved in real quick, and the rest of the predatory capitalists moved in, and now they're promoting fracking in there, where they're going to frack all over the Ukraine and all that kind of stuff, and they'll virtually destroy the area instead of keeping it like it was before, where they had a relationship with Russia that was pretty good. And sanctioning is like carpet bombing during World War II. They carpet bombed the working class neighborhoods. So when you give sanctions, employ sanctions, you hurt the little people. The poorest people in the country suffer the most. So I don't see why people don't see through that. I don't hear even the left talking about that much. Whenever you put sanctions on a country, it starts at the bottom. They get the shaft first. And so you might point that out to people when they start saying how, oh, the sanctions are great. It's not hurting the super billionaires. It's not hurting the upper 2 or 3% in Russia. It's hurting the general people. And that's what they always do, whether it's in war or peace. They use the same kind of strategy, which ultimately hurts all the little people and destroys the middle class. Now let me tell you, just show you a little bit of how this capitalist thing works. There's a corporation, a giant California-based UST Global Corporation, is going to build a cyber defense center in Israel. Now they're based in California, and the guy doing all the talking is a Indian or a Paki, supposedly CEO of the company that's living in California. See, these guys immigrate here, then they get into business, and then all of a sudden, I mean, these people are not world citizen, they're capitalist system. That's it. Now, he's going to get 10,000 jobs for Israeli Jews. Listen to this.
נמצא עכשיו בוושינגטון עם סאג'נט שהוא מנכ״ל של חברת תוכנה עם 18,000 עובדים. הוא החליט להקים בישראל מרכז פיתוח שבו הוא יכשיר אנשים מהפריפריה, חרדים, למקצוע תוכנה בלוח זמנים של 90 יום. How many people do you intend to train in Israel and hire in Israel?
10,000 people over a period of time.
הוא מתכוון לגייס 10,000 ישראלים להכשיר אותם בתוכנה. Why did you choose Israel?
Today, most companies in the world look at cyber defense as one of their top problems. If you look at Israel as a country, as a nation, Israel has the best brand for intelligence and cyber defense, bar none. Number two, 40% of all cyber defense companies today, innovative companies, are located in Israel. And number three, frankly, is the ability of the government leadership to act quickly.
Well, you're optimistic there, but I'm going to do my best. Sajan, מנכ"ל החברה, בחר להקים בישראל מרכז לסייבר סקיוריטי בגלל הכישרון והמותג של ישראל בתחום הסייבר. We're going to help you. I hope we can start when? How soon do you think?
We want to start this quarter.
Okay. This quarter?
That is up to March.
Up to March.
December. Yes.
Good. I'm a minister until March 17th. I'm going to do my very best to help you.
Thank you.
I'll see you in Israel, right?
I'll see you in Israel.
Shalom. Toda rabah.
Thank you very much.
So here's an Indian son of a bitch with a dot on his head. I mean, he doesn't have a dot on his head, or a Paki, one of the two. And they're coming over here by the droves. They come in here, and if they got the money for $10,000, they buy their citizenship. In other words, they say, well, you got to invest $10,000 or something to get... And then they were selling citizenships. And then this guy develops a company in California. And then he ships all the jobs out to other countries. 10,000 jobs going from California to Israel. And this goes on every day. And these guys get away with it. They don't take any pushback. The government doesn't push back, nothing. You know, as far as I'm concerned, their plants could be burnt to the ground, and I'd be thrilled to death. If they're not going to hire Americans, then why do we let them here? They're not doing us any good whatsoever. They're using this as a base, and the main thing they want the base here is because still the United States is relatively safe for to carry on business. And that's why most of these people come to the United States, doesn't come here to better themselves culturally and socially. I mean, they want to better themselves financially, and they feel the United States, they don't have to worry about getting their plants blown up or burnt to the ground and things like that. That's why they're here. That's why thousands and thousands and thousands of these people are here. And they tell you, they come here seeking a better life, this wretched refuse. And it's all bullshit. It's total capitalist corruption. And that's why I don't think we can go on managing life under a capitalist system. I believe it in racial socialism and racial socialist revolution. And because this cannot be allowed to last, and we never can achieve any of our goals under this system the way it's operated now. But how many newspapers around are writing articles about this dirty Indian that's shipping 10,000 jobs to Israel? Yeah. And all the jobs that are there already, because they got a burgeoning semiconductor electronics industry in Israel, and they brag about how great it is. You know where most of that intelligence comes from? German Jews. Oh yeah, they some survived. And French Jews and English Jews that migrated to Israel, and you know, biologically, they carry the European education and so forth. We're so wonderful. We give these bastards all the education we can in Europe, and then no matter what happens, they carry it with them someplace else, and they build things up, and they, oh, it's because they're Jews. Bullshit. It's not because they're Jews. It's because they carry European genes. Yeah, I know, Christian identity. You don't believe that, you know. But that's why it is, and that's the people who formed Israel. It was a European colony. I mean, there were a lot of Eastern European Jews that physically didn't fit too well, but they're still lighter than most of the Arabs and so forth, the Pakis and like that. So anyhow, when Israel brags about how smart they are and how intelligent they are and their war machine, which they literally copied off the Germans, just tell them you're full of bullshit. And another piece of news from the Middle East, the Jews of Israel are they got their warplanes attacking Damascus now. I mean, Israeli fighter pilots reported to have bombed Damascus on Sunday as an excuse to prevent S-300 missiles from reaching Hezbollah terrorist bases in Lebanon. You know, I've been of the opinion for quite a long time, let's finish this fight. Either Israel kill off every goddamn Palestinian and that's it, or the Palestinian and the Arabs wipe out Israel. Let's get it over with. Instead of going on for 100 years over this crap, mostly phony crap. Now, Syria is asking the UN for sanctions against Israel. Well, they should, but sanctions by the UN don't mean anything. They're not worth the paper they're written on. Nobody goes by them. Nobody listens to them. The UN puts UN troops into Israel and enforces sanctions. That'll be the day I begin to listen to them. But obviously, Netanyahu, the right-wing nitwit running Israel, is using this as a political ploy for his own career and his party. That's it, pure and simple. And whatever the predatory capitalists who work with them want. Now they're on a big push to free Pollard, the Israeli spy. I didn't know there was any secrets in Washington the Jews didn't know about anyhow, Israel. I mean, I think we need more spies spying on Israel far as I'm concerned, let Pollard go. Shit, he's forget about it. You know, they have all these secrets. They get them all. They probably had them all before he stole them. So going on and on about this damn Pollard, just get him out of here. Let him go back to Israel, where he'll probably be taken care of by somebody else. You notice how you never hear about this big super prison the Israelis built on the south of their country, I think it is, and put all these niggers coming in and won't let them in the country, and they keep them in that big old prison. I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of niggers they got in there. They don't talk about that much. Do you hear anybody talking about that? I was just thinking and reading the Israeli newspapers here. They're in English. I can't read that scribble. Along with just not apologizing for being a white supremacist or someone who uses the term nigger, some of the most educated, famous people in the world have been heard using the word nigger. But the same way with the so-called Holocaust, you know, we've argued, we put out books, we've had all these speakers, we've had the Institute for Hysterical Review. We've had all these guys that have been going on for now for, what, 20, 30 years, and it doesn't change anything. So anybody says, well, what do you think about the Holocaust? Just say, I don't care. That's the end of the conversation. I don't care. If they want to carry on the conversation, just say, I still don't care. And that stops it right there. It's the only way to stop a Jew-formulated discussion. It's, I don't care. Well, here's a story that ended up on the back page near the used car section. Why haven't we heard anything about this white kid that was killed by the cops? I hate the racial double standards in today's media. Here's a segment from Rush Limbaugh's radio show. Here's the story out of Salt Lake City. Our caller who mentioned right before the end of the hour, the previous hour, that there was a shooting. It sounds very similar to what happened in Ferguson, Missouri. It was August 12th. Family of man fatally shot by Salt Lake City police wants justice. A day after the Salt Lake City police shot and killed a man, a white man whose family claimed he was unarmed, questions about the shooting remain unanswered. You notice how they say, the family claims he was unarmed. And all the ones about the niggers, they always say he was unarmed. They never say anybody claims, they say he was unarmed. But when it's a white, his family claims he was unarmed. Questions about the shooting remain unanswered, see? Unanswered because they're a pro-cop state up there in Utah. Republican to the core. Dylan Taylor, 20, who is from Salt Lake, was exiting. Hold it. Well, let's try that again. Dylan Taylor, 20, who is from Salt Lake, was exiting a 7-Eleven with his brother and cousin Adam Thane about 7 p.m. on Monday when Salt Lake City police arrived, responding to a report of a man waving a gun in the area. The officers ordered the men to ground. Two of them complied, but Dylan, who police said matched the suspect's description, did not go down. It came in as a 9/11 call that there was a man with a gun. Watch that, because people can do that to you. They'll call up the cops and say, there's a man at such and such address with a gun waving it around, and they could use that on you or me or anybody else. It's been tried on me, I'm pretty sure, but the local sheriff's smart enough to know that I'm not out waving a gun around. He was verbally challenged and ultimately was shot. Sweeten did not release further details on the shooting on Tuesday. Now, noting the similarities to the Michael Brown story, except in this case, there's no evidence that the victim actually committed a crime, as there is in St. Louis. Note the total absence of any mention of race in this story. There's absolutely no mention of race. Now, from all accounts, Dylan Taylor didn't obey the cop's orders because he was wearing headphones. He may have heard the orders to get down may not have heard the orders to get down. He reportedly was trying to pull off his pants in order to get down on the floor. Pull up his pants to get down on the floor. That's weird. In any case, he didn't resist. He didn't hit the cop. He didn't try to flee. And yet he was shot dead. The officers involved in the shooting have been placed on administrative leave, but in this story there's no reference whatsoever to race. Now, our caller said that the police officer that pulled the triggers black, except the media, Salt Lake City, not referring to him that way. They're referring to an officer as other than white. Those sons of bitches. Which reminds me of George Zimmerman becoming only the second known white Hispanic, a title given to the New York Times by the New York Times. He was not a white Hispanic. He wasn't even a Hispanic, because a white Hispanic emanates from the Iberian Peninsula, and usually he's white. I've traveled enough in Spain and in the army to know that there's a hell of a lot of blonde-haired, blue-eyed, red-headed, pale-skinned whites in Spain and also in Mexico. So there's a difference between a Hispanic and a mestizo. You got to get that straight. These are not Hispanics. You don't use the word Hispanic unless they're white. Spanish. Anyhow, a title given by the New York Times. George Zimmerman, white Hispanic, shot back innocent kid, Trayvon Martin. They're always innocent, and they're always achievers in school and stars in football, basketball. You know the drill. And in St. Louis and Ferguson, it's white police officer Darren Wilson shoots innocent, gentle giant who's thinking about the first day of college classes in the middle of the street at 2:15 in the morning on Saturday, 2:15 on Saturday afternoon in St. Louis, Ferguson. It's all St. Louis. They can't wait to mention the racial aspects in St. Louis. They can't wait to. They don't talk about the racial aspects in Chicago, that there aren't any racial aspects here in Salt Lake City. However, our caller said that the media said the cop is other than white. So I said, well, what was he, Hispanic or illegal alien? No, he's a black police officer, but the media will not say that. I told you the corporate media has to be taken down in any kind of armed struggle in this country. Get that, FBI, write that down, home security. I'm just being honest with you. I could lie to you and say, I don't believe in violence. We lone wolves would never commit violence, like all these phony right-wing groups do. But you don't want to destroy the media buildings, because we'll need them to put our own media in. Of course, if you know human psychology like I do, and crowd psychology, the minute the mop started to flop in this country and it began to go strongly racial, these people, you could walk in and say, now you're going to do this, and they would do it. They'd flip in a minute. They might mumble a little bit, but they'd get in line. They'd say, oh, I was always racist. I couldn't do it because I'd lose my job if I let them know I was racist. Yeah. All these top news people, shit. If they saw the writing on the wall, they'd flip in a minute, in a heartbeat. And the ones that just said, well, I would never, abandon my liberal, pro-black, blah, blah, blah position because I'm a Jew or I'm a Christian or I'm whatever, I'm a humanist. Well, those you just have to take outside the corporate printing publishing house and one in the head, one in the heart. That's the way it works when you change regimes and culture. Remember, I watched on black and white TV when Castro took over, and he herded all those opposition people who were trying to kill him into the soccer stadium and lined him up and shot him. That was on national TV here in the United States. I saw it. Well, that's what happens in a real radical changeover. It always happens. I want to thank all you lone wolves out there that dig around and get these good stories and send them to me, because I really appreciate it that we work as a team, and that helps. because there's not enough time in a day for me to get all the really juicy ones, but I want you to be very discriminatory when you get these articles. I don't want just, nonsensical ones and ones that don't really go to the core of the problem. So, but I really thank you for getting them into me. And here's another email from one of our lone wolves, and I appreciate all those comments you guys sent in. I wish you'd send in even more. TT, I agree with you, going back to the term white supremacist, because unfortunately separation is not even possible at this point. The minute these niggers were free from slavery, all of them should have been put on a ship back to Africa where they belong. Well, there were people trying to do that. There were writers of books, and I've got them here in my library, that were working on it. Even Lincoln, even though he's just a politician, he put up, got Congress put up $250,000 to move the niggers down to Nicaragua, but the Nicaraguans thought it over for a while and got back to him and said, no, we don't think so. So that went down the tube. Anyhow, it was the only logical conclusion. What is illogical is how none of these niggers chose to go back to Africa when they were free. Well, I've got a book out here in the library, just a minute. Book title is Black Zion, and that's written by David Jenkins, The Return of Afro-Americans and West Indians to Africa. A lot of you don't realize during the 70s, and there's always been a sprinkling of blacks that have gone back to Africa to live, but during the 70s, during the big black power push, they were really talking about it, and some of their leaders even went back there. But the book pretty much details the crap that they got when they reached Africa, what happened to them. And they were wearing these big bushy hairdos, and the regular Negroes in Africa made fun of them, laughed at them, spit on them, insulted them, and probably killed some of them. And so a whole lot of them that went over there to the Holy Land, or to their Holy Land, came back. I'll read a little from the prologue here while we're at it. Whatever or wherever they came to think Africa was, many early slaves were convinced they would return to it in their own lifetimes. The principle of religious freedom for the white man and the institution of slavery for the black man had both been established in the British American colonies at about the same time. In 1620, the year of the Pilgrim Fathers landed in Plymouth Rock, a previous settler in America noted about the last of August came in a Dutchman of war that sold us 20 niggers. Almost from the start, slavery was one of the foundations of the white man's economic system, perpetuated and justified by political cowardice and religious hypocrisy. It sure was. I agree with you. For the black man, it was a diaspora, and the return from it became a notion of great political and religious significance. During the long years of the slave trade between Africa and the Americas, the captains of some slave vessels reported that certain vexatious captives jumped overboard even when secured in irons and tried to swim home. Africans viewed slavery with a logic different from those of their masters. They were, of course, used to slavery being the natural fate of a prisoner of war in Africa, as a deal entered into between a family and a chief who needed menial servants to enhance his status, or as a level in the household hierarchy. They regarded the sale and export of human beings as an aberration, and believed that despite all the evidence, their servitude could only be on fixed terms. Their deliverance was not a vague possibility or something equally vaguely desired. It was inevitable. Only later, when they realized that the mass exportations were permanent, did the idea of deliverance become confused with the Christian idea of heaven. At first, their master's heaven was a living reality, mingled with their own animistic beliefs. As time went on, by and by, it became clear to them that their deliverance was through death, and that only through death they could have heaven, and therefore Africa could be reached. Lord, I want to cross over into the campground, went on. Early slave song. Quote, only when I gets to heaven I'll walk all about. There's nobody there for to turn me out. And we'll land on Canaan's shore. The earliest song stressed that we shall of a definite return rather than that we hope of a more orthodox religious aspiration. A minority, however, clung to the belief that after all Africa was the real place and that no superhuman power had transplanted them to the new world and that they could employ human physical means to return. One such was Job Ben Solomon, a Muslim Fulani, who had been captured on the banks of the Gambia in 1731 and sold into slavery. From Maryland, he wrote to his father, pleading with him to ransom him. The letter was intercepted in London, and Solomon came to the attention of the philanthropic James Oglethorpe. Oglethorpe redeemed Solomon for £45 and brought him to England, where he gained a reputation as an Arabic scholar, and was even presented at court to Queen Caroline. Solomon was sent back to his village in Bandau. His sponsors believed him to be a useful means of encouraging British trade. You see here, there's always the mercantilism and capitalism. He arrived back in 1736. I must leave you to guess the raptures and the pleasures I enjoyed, he wrote, with disappointing lack of detail to a friend. Floods of tears burst their way. Little more was heard of Solomon. It is unlikely that he did anything to satisfy the greed of his sponsors. Anyhow, this is a good book from a black man's point of view, and also, like I say, all those black power people that got all excited about going back to Africa, a lot of them did, and a lot of them became really disgruntled and mistreated by their own people back there. In fact, the average black African, at least in the past, has had more, he'd rather deal with a white person than a black person, and that's a fact, because they know each other quite well. They know how they are. So anyhow, that's something you might want to pick up sometime. I'm going to read it again. I read it 20 years ago, 25, 30. To me, everything's 20 years ago. It could have been 25 or 30. Let's see, who printed that book? Wildwood House, London. But I'm sure if you go up to the various book places, in 1975 it was published. And I'm sure that it could be obtained through used bookstores. These are the things you need to study while there's no shooting going on, or at least not too much, because you need a strong intellectual basis to back you up in the sleek and bad days when it's going to get really bad. Because you'll be questioning, why am I doing all this? Why am I still struggling? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Well, you have to get a strong intellectual basis for your racism, or you'll lose it. Like these guys that come in and they go to a couple of these right-wing racist get-togethers and they all sing Germany Uber Alles and all that stuff, and then they go home and they do nothing, and then within a few months they're out of the struggle and they're usually appearing on the next expose TV show about how, oh, I see the way now. Well, you didn't know the way in the first place. You were never racist. You don't become a racist just by feeling a hatred for some nigger down on the corner. It's a full-time job supporting and educating yourself about the race. And, of course, takes a lot of time to understand the thinking of the other races, because if you got an opponent or someone who you feel is a problem, you want to know all about them. You want to know everything they think, what they promote, and how far they're willing to go. You know, just like the I don't know who it was, the general that was fighting the Desert Fox down in Africa. And I don't know whether it was Patton or not, but one of those guys, he said, in the middle of a tank battle in North Africa, and they said, somebody said something to him. He said, "Well, I read his book. I know what he's going to do." So you got to know the enemy. You got to know the opposition. Well, boys and girls, that's it for today. Yeah. Moon's Day. Getting the week started off pretty good here. I'll be back tomorrow on Tears Day. And we'll see what we can dig up then. In the meantime, watch your back. And don't take sides in this stupid struggle that's going on now, because this struggle is helping us a lot if you understand how things work. So just stand by. I'm not going to say keep your powder dry. Somebody criticized that. Somebody, I don't know, what the hell. I still believe keep your powder dry. Well, obviously, most of us don't have 20 pounds of powder in a can. I mean, you know, you got bullets. So keep your bullets dry. Keep your bullets dry, baby, and keep your mouth shut. And if anybody comes to you and they really want to get in tight with you, just say, "I'm a lone wolf. I'll meet with you, have a cup of coffee." But beyond that, you're on your own. Yeah, there's plenty of education up there on resist.com. We don't need to be meeting all the time so everybody can see us together and all that. You don't need that kind of stuff. I don't encourage it either. I get guys all the time wanting to come and sit down, go to dinner and all that kind of. I discourage it other than maybe a really brief meeting, because most of the kind of guys that have done that have never done anything, gone into anything. I haven't heard anything about them. They come and have a dinner or cup of coffee and all, and talk and all, rah, 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 and then they go and that's it. So I'm wasting my time. And keep your mouth pie hole shut.